list.
I hope they're like playing open deck lists and somebody just like looks at the name and they're like, all right.
All right, I got one going. Three, two,
so,
one.
So the border is a saga.
Oh my god. Killing me.
I like you see, how but like then a... you copy it with Thespian Stage with the trigger on the stack.
Yeah, and like
oh, because then so... it just gains the thing, right?
And so, then well, you the never saga... have to sacrifice your border lock. You see, right now trying to get the United States from Canada is like there's a glacial chasm and you think it's about to go away, but then they copied it with Thespian Stage.
Isn't it more like elephant grass?
Why? You can't copy an elephant grass.
No, elephant grass, no, but like you just think they're not across the border.
Elephant grass is like when...
You could, but yeah, if we play for a plane, we could get there.
Elephant grass is like when we're going to Mock's boarding house and Phil is with us and he has to pay to cross the border.
Was that the cold open? Was that the cold open or was that the
No. Start. Do your countdown. Go.
I mean, now I'm like, I like how I shit on you guys, but I'm like, what I'm saying is not funny. So I'm like, excuse me. It's time for comedy.
Magic cards, 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 fuck, this is so bad.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's being prevented from going to Everett, Washington. Even though it's the first time we've wanted to go to fucking Everett, Washington. My name is Kunamori. I'm here as always. I'm going to change it up this time, just like we talked about, Jeff, with my co-host, Brendan McBain. McBain, how's it going?
Hello, 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 Quinn. I am so excited that I got to go first. Wow.
I don't like this vibe.
McBain, how was your week? Like, what was your kind of... I'm going to put my manager Quinn hat on. What are your wins this week? What are some challenges that you had?
Well, I was away last cast on vacation, and it was fantastic. We went to the Gulf Islands, which are between the mainland of British Columbia and Vancouver Island. I learned all about how some of the Gulf Islands were potentially going to be American, and then the British wanted to take more of the Gulf Islands, and there's this whole... It's called the War of the Pig, I think, if I recall correctly. So now we're a geography and history podcast. No pigs were actually harmed in... Actually, no, one pig was harmed in this war. No wow. People were harmed. But now the border is where it is. Anyway, but it was fantastic. Close. Yeah. Yeah, so...
Is there anything else? Oh, and we're also here, as always, with our co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, now that you've gone second, we can just open up the conversation.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to worry about like moving us along.
Hey Quinn, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you? Same thing.
Really good.
How are you feeling this week? How are you feeling out of 10?
Out of 10 this week? Honestly, I'm feeling kind of shitty this week. I'm going to say like 6.
Yeah, tell me about that. Because I feel like last week we checked in and you were like an 8, and that's okay. You know, you will have ups and downs, but 6. Let me know. I know it's been a little busy this weekend. You just told me you're tired, but anything else you may want to chat about?
I don't like this like YouTube vlogger turn we're taking. I feel like McBain's hello, 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 put us on a track that's I want to get off of.
I want off the ride, Bubby.
I mean, thinking of YouTube, I just want to remind everybody to smash that like button, subscribe, hit up our Patreon.
Yeah, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts.
However you listen to this podcast, rate us 5 stars. Really helps out.
Helps out the algorithm and stuff.
Shout out to the actual, like, the 2 people who rate us 5 stars. We don't actually care if you do that, but I mean, we care if you have done it. It's very nice, but like, you don't have to, we're not asking you to do that for the record. Thank you. If you did, don't feel like we're trying to pressure you into doing it.
I'm going to pressure anybody to see in person. Make sure they do it. Show me your phone. Let me see.
That'd be a great, like, as things start to open up again. And we're like, yeah, Jeff, like, how's it been, man? How's the last 2 years been? That's pretty good. Our podcast is pretty good if you want to rate it and subscribe. Yeah, okay. I could do that, man. Like how are other things? Like, you staying safe? Yeah, I'm staying safe, and I'll stay safer with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Anyways.
Just trying to get that featured list.
Why don't we use a housekeeping?
Oh, so there's quick. So quick to the housekeeping.
There's some big ones. There's some bummers, though.
It's funny because one of these things almost kind of explains the other. It also kind of doesn't, because it wouldn't have applied, but in a sense, it still does. So we now bring you to Border Watch 2021.
Border Watch 2021.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Border Watch 2021. The Canada-US border, specifically that direction.
One-way street. It is only one-way currently. It is jammed up.
They announced, I will say extremely irresponsibly, no timing between when it was closed until and when they announced it will also then be closed until. There's like 6 hours until it was over. The border's closed until, I think right now, October 21st, probably 2022. So unfortunately, the three of us and anybody else from the area is not able to make it to Puget Sound Battleground number 3.
Unless they fly. Which would be very impressive.
That thought did cross my mind, because it's like, I have a hotel that's booked. Obviously, you know, that can be refunded. I have a ticket with Geek Fortress, which obviously can be refunded. They're very cool guys. But then it's like, I just really kind of want to play some Paper Magic. And you see like the Legacy Pit event that's happened, and you're just thinking, man, I just want to be in a convention center playing Magic. This sounds great. But then you look up a flight and it's like $500.
Oh, really? Like,
yeah,
well, I guess there's not a lot, especially down in the States right now.
It was almost $600.
Yeah, if it was like 200, like, it's still like a lot to swallow for it would be like, you know, like a $50 car ride or something. But like 500, like, oh my god.
I flew to Portland one time and I think it was like $150.
Yeah, see, I think about it then.
It was like one way, like, so it would be $300 return.
Mm-hmm. Still,
I flew down for before GP Tacoma, flew down to Portland. And then I took the train up to Tacoma, and then that's how I met you guys there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. The good old days.
So the
border watch. So it's closed. We're done.
It's closed. We're done. Very important to note, though, the event is still happening. So if you're listening to this and you're on the right side of the border for the tournament, please go and support these guys. I'm sure they just had a bunch of people that had to cancel because of this. So, you know, any extra support for them would be great. Second set of news, not related to the land border crossing, but because there's no way I would be making this drive. Jeremy of Missouri MTG has canceled the 100K due to concerns about Delta variant. And there's quite a few high numbers around that area. So, unfortunate news, but, you know, Jeremy's being a real one. Always able to trust him in this case to, you know, make the smart and hard choice here. So, you know, it sucks, but it also makes sense. And he's already been on top of issuing refunds to everybody. I think he just tweeted today that his PayPal got locked because he was sending like $80,000 out to like, you know, a couple hundred different people. So disappointing. No major Paper Legacy in the near future here. Also kind of sad to hear Jeremy not just postpone the 100K, but I mean, it's got to be hard to do. He's already postponed it a few times.
Yeah, I think, like, at this point, yeah.
yeah, it's easier to just like chop it and regroup and, you know, set it up. So hopefully there's something like that, because I mean, 100K is fucking wild. And that would be a lot of fun whenever it is. Maybe even Missouri, like the fourth time we go back to Innistrad.
Missouri has approximately the same population as British Columbia. And their rolling average of cases over 7 days is about four times higher. So it's not, we're not doing great here. So.
Yep. So that's legacy centric housekeeping. In other news, the Connection Games of Comics has opened up for at least pre-releases. You guys were just there. Do you know if they were talking about doing any like scheduled constructed events or anything, or is this just like a let's see how it goes?
We are doing other events. We're idiots, so we didn't ask about legacy. We just looked through some foils, pack ward, plate sealed.
Look, you had a lot of like LGS experience to get out of your system, so I'll let it go.
It was pretty overwhelming. Like, so I made my sealed deck. I sleeved it up. I commented to Quinn across the table from me. I'm like, these sleeves are pretty shitty. Like, I had them on the shelf forever. And I'm shuffling up like for my game one with my opponent in front of me. And I look down. I'm like, oh, all the double face cards I can see like right through these sleeves. So I had to say, okay, hold on a minute, and like take out the double face cards and write on like the checklist cards. Well, they're not like checklist anymore. They're kind of like build your
own. Oh, it's like a filler. Yeah.
They kind of have a night day section. So I scribbled some stuff down. I was like, man, this paper stuff is laborious.
Man, keeping track of day and night in paper. Oh boy.
The fact that like it's just there forever, like, oh yeah, as soon as everywhere else dead, and it's just like happens, oh
yeah. God. I was playing my poor opponent. He's like very nice guy, new to Magic. Really, like, I think he'll be good at the game, you know. But like, I mean, it's everyone has been there before. I'm still there. Where you're just like, oh, something's going on. And he had something that like every time it flipped, he like gained life. And I was like, oh, you got to gain life, man. And he's like, it flips again. I'm like, yeah, it just keeps flipping. It just right now that it's here, it just keeps on flipping.
Okay, I was sitting beside you, and the amount of like, oh, we forgot that. So that came up that I heard from the two of you.
Yeah.
Like, Jesus, Quinn, like, get your shit together.
Well, I was trying to keep track of my own board state, you know?
And then I know. Like, it was just,
you
know, like,
you gotta you get your life. Like, I flicked
cardboard the and dice everywhere. And they look, you're calling the judge.
Everybody here has had the, you know, the handicap of playing on Arena or Magic Online for the last like year and a half. You know, yeah, not there's only a lot of missed triggers own, once people
makes an animation.
Right. You see the Realm Waker giant come down.
I actually, with the judge call, though, I stumped Max.
Oh, this is a good one. I think I had the right answer.
I feel like if we try and explain this, it's not going to
change. Yeah, I'm just like, we're not going to do this.
Well, you got to get into it. It's not that complicated. Okay.
So it's I need to look up the card now.
Ludovic
Necro Alchemist, which
you got the ultimate version
of.
No,
it's not Ludovic Necro Alchemist. It's Ludovic something else.
It's whatever the Ludovic in the new set is.
Ludovic Innistrad.
It's like an Oleg.
Okay, while you pull it up,
Ludovic Necro Genius. So Ludovic Necro Genius is blue and a black for a 2/3. What do you? Enters the battlefield or attacks, you mill a card. And then for X, blue, blue, black, black, activate only as a sorcery. Exile X creature cards from your graveyard. Transform Ludovic X can't be zero. Flips into Olag, Ludovic's Hubris, which is a 4/4. When it transforms, it becomes a copy of one of the creature cards exiled with it. Except it's still Oleg Ludovic's Hubris, and it's a 4/4, and it's a legendary blue and black zombie in addition to its other colors and types. And you put +1/+1 counters on Oleg equal to the number of creature cards exiled with it. So one of the cards I exiled with it was this card called Ecstatic Awakener, which is a 1 black for a 1/1. and you can pay two and a black, sacrifice a creature, draw a card, and you flip it into a 4/4. And you can only activate that once per turn. So my question for Max, who is running the tournament for us at the Connection, was typically cards that copy other cards, like don't copy the backside. Like they just come in, they copy a creature. But this card also has two sides. So I was like, if I pay two and a black, sack a, because you generate tons of zombies in the new Innistrad that can only attack once. So they're just really good sack fodder. Like, can I just draw a card every single turn? Or does it flip back into the 2/3? And he was like, I want to say no, but I'm going to look that up. And he's like, the internet doesn't know. And we were saved because my opponent was like, well, I'm going to exile that because it sounds scary no matter what. And I'm like, great. Problem
solved. I love those judge calls when you're like, you let it ride out and you're like, this seems complicated. I'm just going to kill it.
Yeah, you're on the other side of the table and you're like, all of this sounds bad for me. Just nuke that thing. So what was your interpretation, Jeff?
My interpretation is that it would flip back into the regular Ludovic, because if you have a card and you do the transform operation on it and it's able to, it does. I was going to say classic example that comes up, but I don't know where this actually came up. Jace Vryn's Prodigy. You can transform it by casting a Moon Mist, if you remember that card from the original Innistrad. It's green, white, instant, like all humans transform. I think it gives them trample or something too. But the thing with Jace Vryn's Prodigy is it transforms into the Planeswalker, but if you look at the actual activated part of Jace, it exiles and comes back as the Planeswalker. So if it just straight transforms, it's a Planeswalker with zero counters and it dies. So
wow.
Building off of that knowledge I have, for some reason, I suspect if you apply the transform operation to this card, it would transform. Huh?
That
seems, and now for something completely different.
Oh, except so this might be a wrinkle. So this is my fault for not reading the entire word for word text on Ecstatic Awakener. Sacrifice another creature, draw a card, then transform Ecstatic Awakener.
Mm-hmm. You're but falling for the classic. The card name in the text refers to like the card name, not Ecstatic Awakener.
Even if it's like explicit about like,
yeah,
what the name of the card is. Oh, are you a judge, Chef? that was a facetious question. I'm like, actually, are you?
Oh no, I have looked at some of like the rules. What's like the thing before? I think I got rid of it, but like a rules. I don't know. Advisor. Test. Yeah, yeah. I failed that a few times, but I fancy myself a wannabe.
I mean, I put in a Planeswalker for show and tell one at a time in a Copper AL tournament. So,
well, I told you before that I top aided a GPT accidentally playing five copies of a Sylvan Advocate. So,
strong card at the time. So, yeah,
it's keeping me back from ever having a seat on the judicial bench.
Speaking of funny rules interactions, how's that for a segue?
Baby.
We just want to talk about Banner because there's a Saga got printed. I don't know if anyone's heard of that card, but it fetches Grindstone, which is quite strong in that deck.
Can I jump in with a super quick story, not related to Painter, but related to Saga today? I was playing online and you've talked about this before, Quinn, and I didn't think about this until it was too late. So I saw a JTL list from the showcase that just happened. And it was just Yoran, Esper Vile, and I figured I have my God account until tomorrow, I think. So I'll just run this in a league and have some fun. And I played against like a mono red Stompy deck that was playing Saga. And, you know, I have two lands in play. There's like a Swamp and a Plains. And I have Marsh Flats and another Marsh Flats in hand, for what it's worth. And their Saga goes up to three. And I'm like, there's something about this. I'm like, I seem to remember there's like, you know, an old adage that you should do something before the Saga goes to three when you have a fetch land. And I was like, I don't remember what it is. This is fine. And then they just got the needle, needled March Flats.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
It's like the next level when you just play Pithing Needle, especially in paper, and you look at your opponent and you're like, Pithing Needle, I'll play Pithing Needle. And they're like, yeah, okay. And like, it resolves. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. You're sure. Yes, I name polluted Delta. Oh no.
That's always the quickest swerve. You're like, well, I'm going to needle this other thing. And then they just let it resolve. You're like, oh, you have two deltas there. Okay. But yeah, immediately I was like, Quinn talked about this. I remember this. And I'm really glad that Magic Online doesn't do the thing. Like, it's not how the card's built. But have you ever seen like somebody use like a Chrome Mox that doesn't have like anything exiled under it? And it's just this sad little tap untap animation as it does nothing. Like, I'm glad that the Marsh Flats doesn't do that because I can't activate it. But I'm pretty sure my opponent knew exactly what I was trying to do. What the fuck? Okay, that's it. That's the end of it. So please, Grindstone fetching, a much better one mana artifact. Wait, I have another saga fetching.
I have another digression.
Yes.
Were there more god accounts?
Yeah, so this makes no sense. They did it for that week and then it was off, and then they did Gen Con events and the exact same thing, prelims for a Modern Horizons 2 qualifier in January. And those god accounts started with like zero fanfare and they're over again tomorrow. And I think they're actually doing it again in another week. I don't know why they're doing week on, week off, week on, week off. It seems like the worst way to do it, but I don't know.
Okay, we have, we've mentioned before, like we have a Magic Slack, various channels. Last time you were like, you're not in the MTGO channel. I'm like, okay, that's my bad. I don't play MTGO. I didn't want to hear about MTGO all the time. I'm in it now. The Slack that has been dominated by the discourse around should we ban Brainstorm and what's the best Apple? And again, no one mentions that there's god accounts.
That is true. I just saw this one on Twitter on like Friday or something, and I registered for an event, and like I didn't even think to tell anybody.
I want to look up like all the things you said in the Slack over the last week to be all like the things all she these said, things all are the more things important. She said. Than, like, yeah, exactly.
I think I got in on the Apple discourse this week too, so I have no excuse. I will now fade away from the microphone and listen to Painter.
So
I got some Honeycrisp rocking in my pantry right now.
So one person that's actually pretty good on Twitter at kind of just like announcing things when they're happening, and is also pretty good at, again, piloting the community in London, is Callum or Whitefaces MTG on Twitter. And I think this is what kind of stoked the fires with Quinn and I, honestly, was Callum tweeting about the Painter list that he took down the monthly London tournament, I think, with like a mono red Painter build. And you definitely said that to me in our private Slack channel, and because we're just so cool. And I immediately like fell in love with the list. I was like, this is pretty sweet. And I just went and pulled out all my Painter cards and put them down. I was like, all right, I'm making this. And I believe you did the same.
I did. I was missing a Sky Sovereign console flagship, which Callum, if you're listening and you can tweet us and tell us what matches that comes in for, I'd really appreciate it. Cause I'm willing to buy one, but I didn't have it on hand and was like, when do I use this?
Dude, it's Flame Tongue Kavu. You just get it off Karn.
It costs 5 mana.
Yeah, that's fine. You have a
Karn. I guess you've been like welded in.
You just
Karn tutor for it. Back and forth forever.
Yeah, you just keep killing things.
Oh, that's so okay. I'm back in. I'm back.
Okay.
All right. I mean, I wasn't in. I knew there was a smart reason for this. I just didn't understand because I'm stupid. But
also, you have big ass constructs that can crew it.
Yes.
Look, the only good things happen when Urza gets near a boat.
Yeah, so it was great. Last webcam Thursday, Quinn and I both played approximately the same 75 plus or minus cards we didn't have. I didn't have a Mycosynth Lattice, for example. And I also didn't have an Ichor Wellspring.
Lattice is a rough one to be missing when you're playing a Karn deck.
It's not like, I'll talk about it in a minute, but the red white Painter list that Jack Kitchen's been kind of championing along with a few others in the Discord does not play Karn, or does not play Lattice, does still plays Karn, but Lattice was always a little bit more win more. And so I never really picked them up because they like spiked horrendously after Karn came out. And each time I've played with them, I just borrowed them. But so I didn't have a few of those things, but that's fine. Quinn, what were your thoughts playing with Urza Saga?
I played a different Kalum list, the mono blue, which was the first thing I picked up after Saga came out. Having a plan B and a tutor for Grindstone, or if you have a Grindstone, just some utility artifact or extra mana to activate Grindstone, whatever you need, it's just insane. The construct plan is so real.
Oh, the construct plan is very real. Even like the incidental things where it's just like, oh, the Urza Saga goes and gets an artifact for you. Like some just random, like even just a grindstone or something that just you just need to get your welders going to bring back other things. Like,
yeah.
Kalum's list even has like a one of Trinisphere in the main deck, which you can search for with the Goblin Engineer and then bring in against people, which is a pretty little spicy little lockdown piece you can do to slow decks.
I actually had a scenario. It's less obvious than what happened to Jeff. And we haven't talked about it, but I had no artifact in my yard. And so I think I had a Trinisphere in play or something. And I hit chapter 3 on Urza Saga. I make a construct and I'm like trigger on the stack for the tutor. My opponent's like, yeah, I should go ahead. And I get a Lotus Petal and they kind of went, and then they paused. And then I'm like, I guess I'll just pass. Or I attacked with a one construct, whatever, and I passed the turn. And then they tried to blow up the Trinisphere. And so I sacked the pedal, put it in the yard, and then flipped them around. Then flipped them back again because I had like double welder going.
I love double welder.
But you could tell that they, when the Lotus pedal came into play, they were like kind of like, is he thinking what I just realized? Oh, yes. Like, yes, I've been thinking about how my poor empty graveyard will not let me save my Trinisphere if need be.
Yeah, so I was really impressed with Saga and like between so again, I always really liked the selection that you had with Sensei's Top, which was fantastic. And when Goblin Engineer came on, I was and Karn, I was like, okay, we're getting there, but like it still felt a little bit you're just relying on the top of your deck and it just wasn't doing it for me. But the Urza Saga is really kind of pushing over the edge. Like your top decks are so good in the deck now. Like you have so many cards that you're just like, oh, this is four different cards.
Yeah.
I just drew another card. Oh, it's an Imperial Recruiter. That's another four different cards. Like you can really start to execute a lot of different game plans all at once now, which again is something that I always liked with Painter. So yeah, I had a really fun time playing it. I love my English P3K recruiters that I have. And when I was playing those, I was like, oh, these are just so beautiful. And I had one etched, whatever. Like I have three English P3K ones and then one etched MH2 one or whatever it is. And it just looks like dog's breakfast. It's disgusting.
Just sell that Russian Painter server you have and then you can get a fourth P3K one and anything else you want.
That thing's worth a lot of money now.
How much have you played with Goblin Engineer? Because I know you have been pretty consistently off the deck since after the top banning, and Engineer is like obviously pretty recent.
I've played maybe three big events with it, like more than just a weekly, like Puget Sound Battleground 1, I played Painter. That's when Karn came out and I was like, let's do this, boys. And maybe it was Karn. Yeah, it was when Karn came out. And the Engineer is great. I think it provides a lot of options. And the fact that it puts it in your yard is like kind of where you want it, honestly. Like it's almost better than like a Stoneforge in this deck.
Yeah.
Because it can be live immediately if you have a welder already going.
So I think that's another thing. Like, it's certainly not like it's like a plan D, but having, actually, I guess I know you didn't have it this week, but like having that worm coil engine in the sidebar sometimes, and just like you have like the welder engineer hand, and you're on the play, you play a welder, your opponent like ponders or something. I guess they could have daze if they ponder, but you just jam the engineer. And the worst thing that happens is they blow their daze and it's like super tempo negative. And then it resolves. You just dump that like worm coil engine in the yard, and then like you have a 6/6 worm coil engine that your opponent has to deal with. Like, that's insane.
And it's been a while since I looked at worm coil, but it creates 2 artifact tokens when it leaves, right?
Yep.
When it dies. So if it gets like swords, then you simply.
But like when you, if you weld it out again.
Yes.
It pops out the tokens.
Yeah.
Okay. That's beautiful. Yeah. The sagas were great. The fact that often Delver like decks, or like even Death and Taxes decks, will often try to attack your mana base when you're playing Painter. And Saga gives like similar tension to the City of Traders, where they're like, do I really need to waste the wasteland on this? Like, it's going to die. They're going to get a card out of it. Like, do I really need to do it? Are they even going to make a construct? And it takes a bit of the pressure off of your Ancient Tombs, which people often go for, which is nice. Yeah, I've just been really enjoying it. Playing the red one that Callum played, like, I pretty quickly was like, okay, this is good. I like this, but I was almost immediately drawn back to the Strawberry Shortcake version, where you have a bit more optionality. And I'd love to talk a little bit about that if you don't have anything else to say about the mono red version.
No, I mean, I would for sure, like, I haven't played Shortcake since Urza Saga came out, but the first thing that jumped out at me is that you can E2 revert Urza Saga, which just seems like, for a card in E-Tutor that is like you're losing a card and putting a card on the top of your library, like, you get that card back, provided, you know, your saga doesn't get wastelanded.
It's kind of like the slowest E-Tutor in the world, because you E-Tutor for a land that in 3 turns lets you tutor for the piece you want.
But I think there's that thing, you're hiding behind a bridge, or like you're doing something, right? Like with Painter sometimes, where you're not trying to like turbo combo them. And, you know, in between getting that piece you want, you make this big ass construct that is clogging up the board or beating in. And then you get a card out of it at the end.
Yeah. So one of the interesting pieces with the Shortcake list is it's playing. I'm just going to kind of go over some of the cards that are different in it. A lot of the cards are similar, obviously. Callum's list was trimming down. It was -1 on Grindstone and Painter, and it put him into the board. And then he was also like only playing 3 total in the 75. I'm not a huge fan of that. I like to have that kill almost as often as I can. So the 4 Painters in the main, 3 Grindstones in the main is ideal, with your 4th Grindstone in the side, just because it costs a bit less and it doesn't block and all that stuff. You're playing another LED. So right now, well, I'm looking at Jack Kitchen's list, who's one of the Painter grandfathers, who I've debated with quite a bit about a number of Painter things, but some differences. You're trading out a petal for a spirit guide. So you're up to 2 spirit guides, 3 petals. You're going up 1 on your sagas, up to 4. You've got an LED in the list, something that the Callum list doesn't have. And the LED opens up a whole galaxy of lines that you can have, and actually need to kind of pick up an LED because of it. And I was kind of putting it off. Jack is forever on the 4 Imperial Recruiters, as is Callum. I've always kind of been on the 3 Imperial Recruiters bandwagon myself, not biased at all in the fact that I only have 3 English B3K1s at all. And then you're on 2 Karn and Snaring Bridge, 2 Smuggler's Copter, which is kind of pretty standard right now, but Copter is really good. It is an incredible card. And even when you like can crew it with Karn and attack in, and you're like upping your Karn and you don't have a creature on the battlefield, people feel like you're cheating when you do that.
It definitely feels like one of those things that's like, wait, that's not how it works, is it? It's just when it attacks in general.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't need to be crude. Yeah, it just, it does the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I had that interaction came up on Thursday, actually, where I was kind of doing my thing where I pause for a second and think about a number of different lines. And my opponent just kind of interjects and says, can you Karn the cop? I was, oh, yeah, you can do that. You can do that. He's like, cool. I like this.
Don't worry.
This
it only cool. hits you for two, though.
Yeah. But I still get to do the thing. You're playing a main deck Canonist, which is kind of like Callum's main deck Trinisphere that you can search for with the recruiters. And then the big difference is obviously in the sideboard. So in the main, you're the only white card you're playing is Canonist. And Jack's playing three Lightning Bolts, Callum's playing two, and I think they're five blasts apiece, or Callum's up to six. But in the side, you're playing one Enlightened Tutor, so just one. Typically, it used to be two in the main, but what Shortcake has been doing is playing either one portable hole in the main and one in the side, or just one in the side. And I've been waiting to pick this card up because apparently it's just hard to find in Vancouver. And I totally forgot what it even does. So I'm just going to read it out for, well, Jeff's just the sealed master and he knows all the bad white cards, but.
Well, I think I actually have a.
I was going to be like, I can go get mine.
I have one that I think you said you wanted, McBain. It's like the alt border one I have somewhere.
Yeah. So it's artifact one white. And yes, Jeff, I do want that. When portable hole enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls with mana value two or less until portable hole leaves the battlefield, just as a way to like get rid of things. And often a lot of hate pieces that people are using are two or less, so you can use that, and then you can also like welder in things. Unfortunately, it doesn't have a sweet like when leaves the
like
battlefield.
Fiend Hunter tech.
Yeah, it doesn't have any kind of weird wording that you could like trap things forever into a hole. That would be sweet.
It also, unfortunately, you can't get it with Saga, which I didn't realize at first.
Oh, really?
Because Saga is, it can only find things that specifically cost one colorless or zero colorless. It's not one or less. Yeah, I was like, how did everybody miss this? I'm a genius. And it's like, oh, wait, that just doesn't work. You can't do it.
Hmm.
Karn's still really good, though. Like having an artifact answer you can find with Karn and you can, you know, cast and weld in or out is very good.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited to try that out. And yeah, really, I've always just kind of favored the white version. It gives you a lot of flexibility that you can metagame with. On the cool, okay, sweet, I like it. Jeff was just showing me his alternate art portable.
You gotta watch your wording, man.
I was really excited for what
I you heard me pause there. I paused, I was like, hold on, choose your words wisely here. Yeah, it's a tricky card to talk about, I'll say. Like, they almost fall for it every time. But yeah, I've always liked the red-white version, so I'm going to give that a couple more shots. It definitely, thank you, Callum, for kind of reinvigorating, and thank you, Quinn, for kind of egging me on to be like, let's play some Painter. Because I did have a lot of fun, and it's a beautiful deck, and you get to do a lot of cool Galaxy Brain kind of plays, and yeah, it's fun.
It was a strong finisher in the tournament, too. You were like the second best Pander player in the tournament.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was pretty good, but there was some Pander player was like one position ahead of me. I feel sorry for all the webcam people who showed up to play Legacy and then just like played against a bunch of Pander decks.
Oh, I feel like that's like whatever. I don't know. I mean, I like Pander now, so I'm biased, but when I did not play Pander, Pander's like the coolest deck to play against because they do stuff where you're like, yeah, I'll just like red blast your Pithing, you know, like you can't do that. Like, oh, actually, I can do anything I want right now. Excuse me, Pander, red blast anything
for like the kind of like AB combo deck where it's like, okay, yeah, you lose now. I think Pander's like by far the coolest to like get got by, Because there's also like these kind of, you know, the axle points where you're like, oh, I can take that out, I can take this out. But then, you know, they could have seven red blasts in their hand. Like,
oh, I was playing against Anthony, who definitely knows what's up when it comes to like all not just Legacy, but just Magic. And he was playing, what was he playing? Some combo deck. Oh, Epic Gamble. And I found my three ball. You know, I just happened to like have it in my opening hand, and I play it on like turn two, and he's like, oh, that's going to be pretty good. And he's like, how do I get out of this? He keeps like looking at me being like, that Trinisphere. And then he's like, well, I think I only got one shot at this. It's not getting any better for me, because I had just kind of been attacking him. And I had like two welders and an engineer out, and he like gets a shattering spree and tries a shattering spree, and I just like weld things out of well in the back end, and he just laughs and goes, yeah, you knew the line, just had to double check it. Game two. But it's stuff like that, right? Where you're like playing and you're like, oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to playing it some more, but it's great. And I did kind of tweet out to Callum to say thank you. And I did also make the point that I think the correct choice of mountains now is the Bob Ross mountains. Just if you're painting, you might as well make happy little mistakes while you're painting.
They got to make some old border Bob Ross mountains.
If there were old border Bob Ross mountains, I would snap those off in a second. I have like, I have Saga mountains, I think, in for painter.
I have the, in the shortcake list, I forever had, it was one of the APAC Euro mountains for my mountains, but the Bob Ross ones, I already had two. I had bought, the only circular I've ever bought was the Bob Ross one. So I figured, you know, at Connections, I picked up another two. So now I have four mountains for a shortcake to play my Bob Ross happy little mistake mountains, and hopefully not make too many punts for not playing painter for so long.
Putting that a Johnny in the list?
I didn't. But I was because I was playing Callum's list, which is just mono red. But I think I have to when I play painter.
It can't be good the anymore. Version.
Yeah,
it's like, so good. It's always good.
I love too. There was that one time that I think you top aided a Mox boarding house thing, and it would be Sean Brown at the time, I think.
Yeah,
you know, this week in Legacy, you know, highlighted your deck, and he's like, and I don't know what the fuck a Johnny Vengeance doing in here.
I remember that, like when that happened, and I looked at my cyber guide at the time, and literally like every matchup I had Ring to a Johnny Vengeance in. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, it was just twos all the way across the board, like, bring this card in. Yeah, it was like plan F that no one ever thinks about. And then you like blow up all their lands and they're like, what is going on? Yeah. Anyway, so it was fun. It was fun to like actually play with the painter cards and paper again. I'd played it on Magic Online a couple times. And I don't know what it is, but the whole like when you name blue and all the cards go like that old school gold color and stuff on Magic Online, it just doesn't do it for me. So
really? I was gonna say, like, that's the best part about playing Painter Online is like you get to see, you know, your like old border multicolor flicker wisps. Like, it's so cool.
Well, I have like the little poker chip like blue mana symbol that I got from Lyle when he sold that painter.
Yeah, I got one of those too.
On top of the painter. I mean, well, people who have never seen, like, never played against you or never played against Painter are always like, oh, that's nice. So, like, I got it from my buddy Lyle.
Yeah. You should get one of those like blue like cellophane sheets and just like put it over everything.
Reminder.
Everything is blue now. They're like, how do I draw a card? You're like, or tap my mana. Like, no. We just pretend about that stuff, but we have to focus on the fact that everything's blue. Do we want to jump into the probably biggest Legacy event of the year in paper? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Let's go. Let's do it.
So this is the Legacy Pit Open. This was a 20K, right?
Pretty sure it was 20K.
Yes. I remember it was a 10K and they upped it, I believe, is what happened.
Yeah. In Frederick, Maryland. I didn't think they would have information out about this. Like, I watched the top eight on Twitch on Thursday or on Sunday, but I didn't think they'd actually like turn around and have all this information out in time. But everything's been posted on MTG Melee, which isn't really a site where legacy results are normally posted, but you can go on there. I'm saying this because I'm a bit of a data geek. So like, you can go on there and you can see every single person that played, and you can hover over their name and see every single matchup they had, who they played against, and if they won, lost, what the record was. And then you can also see their deck list, which is like an obscene amount of data. And then the legacy data collection team has also done their regular analysis on it. So there's a lot of information out there for something that just happened on Saturday. So big shout outs to those guys. Did either of you guys get to watch any of the stream?
I did not.
I also didn't get to see any of it. I was following a couple of Twitter threads for like some updates, but I didn't get a chance to actually watch the stream.
It was Mike Noble and Mike. I can't remember the other guy's name.
Double Mike.
Pretty sure it was Double Mike. But they did a great job commentating. I think they were... It was on there for like 11 hours or something like that. Like, it was a long haul. Like, when they finished, it was 1:30 in the morning or something. I'm not
sure. It was nine rounds and a top eight, right? Rounds,
yeah.
Yeah, that's like more than like your average GP.
Yeah, so they just powered through and got it done. And you could hear like when Gary and David were playing in the finals and then Gary won at the end. You could hear like the couple dozen people who were still there, like cheering him on and stuff like that, which is pretty rare. I guess it's only reserved for Gary's. I think of the guy in Scotland who won with Mono Red at that GP, like a couple of years ago. And he was like the godfather of Legacy in Scotland. And when he won, there was a whole bunch of people there to cheer him on. Anyway, random moments. But
I think I remember that actually. That was a big deal, right? Because he was
is a GP win, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like the only time Mono Red's ever won, and he was like 45. No, he wasn't even that. He was like 50 something. But yeah, he was quite older, and he would like lend out decks to everyone and all that stuff. And the fact that he just like won the whole thing was incredible. So Gary's apparently. But yeah, so it sounded like it was a great event, well run, and I didn't hear any big no-nos about everything. In your Twitter wanderings, Jeff, did you come across any notable things to share?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot with this one. Not that much. I mean, I was just looking, and it's like, oh, like Brian Koval was like doing pretty good, and then I saw him note that he had two shots at a win and in. He had to win a single one of them to get in the top eight, and he unfortunately whiffed on both of them.
Koval's on
fan, right?
Yeah.
Like fake miracles.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he played against Blue Red Delver in the last two rounds, and he lost 0-2 against both of them.
That's interesting because Brian is one of like just a very good Magic player. Mm-hmm. And that's what you play banned, right? To be Delver.
I don't know. Arguably.
I thought that was like the whole when we saw Bant kind of like rising up again, it was like, oh, it's like praying on all the, is it Delver decks?
Yeah. Well, I think on any given Sunday, Blue Red Delver can just win.
For sure. I'm just thinking we have a pilot that we know is excellent,
I'm just having a look at one of the Blue Red Delver players that beat him. So Alex Vu was in sixth place, double true name, so they traded out two true names for the Murktides. So there you go, Quinn, you don't have to buy a whole bunch of Murktides. Double Brazen Borrower. There's a lot of meltdowns in sideboards.
It was a good idea considering there's actually a decent amount of Affinity that showed up.
Yeah,
Affinity actually performed quite well. But yeah, he I saw his tweet, Brian's, and his tweets, and he was talking about like how his two Life in the Loams in the deck were performing great.
Oh, that's right. Right. He wasn't Bant Control. He was like Bant Loam. Yeah. So I'm saying he was a better Loam deck than dedicated Loam decks. And he was a better like Bant Control deck than dedicated Bant Control decks.
It to be honest, it looks like Bant Control with two Life in the Loams. I don't want to
blow up his spot here.
The only difference is like he's got a Field of the Dead, and because of that, his lands look a little wonky. Like you've got snow covers and non-snow covers, and
Ketria
like
Triome.
Yeah, he's got the Triome in there, but it's more or less you're just fitting Field of the Dead and two Life in the Loams in the deck. I'm sure there was a lot more homework behind it than that, but that's what you're doing. But I'm never going to say anything bad about Life in the Loam. That card's incredible. In terms of the total metagame, Jeff, use your spidey senses and tell me how much D&T do you think was in the room?
I'm thinking 8%.
How'd you figure that out?
I'm not looking at it right now, but we were talking about it before we started, and I think that's the number McBain said.
No, it was actually 8.3%.
Oh, repeating, of course.
Repeating, of course. Actually, no, it's 8.31, so not even repeating, of course. And I think that's been pretty consistent with D&T. Like, it's been hovering around that. Like, generally, I think what the metagame's been shaping out to be is, like, 15-20% Delver, which is like since 2012 been the case.
Delver was printed.
And then you generally have a number of decks like hovering around like 6-8%. And that's what we had here. So things like
big Yorion energy too. There's only a few lists not on Yorion.
For, you know, like those just like totally catch people off guard with your turn one planes. They'll never see it coming if you don't reveal the Orion.
Just 80 cards, choose to not reveal your companion. Could be anything.
I'm just, again, stoked that all this information was able to come out so quickly. Just jumping on, keeping on to the painter train for a second. There was 5 people who played Painter in the event for an 87 match percent match win slash. It was actually 40%. So not great. There was a lot of like, maybe this is just like what you expect with some legacy players where they're like, you know, this is my deck. I'm the Slivers player and I'm just going to show up and I'm going to play Slivers.
Oh, is Nunez on here?
I don't know if Daniel is actually playing, but there was like 2 Sliver decks, for example.
Yeah.
Or there was like a 1 Nykvith player.
There was a good number of Goblins players too, which is sweet.
Yeah, there's 5 Goblins players.
They're also split though. I saw there was some categorization as like black red goblins and also like just like goblins or like red goblins.
I'm looking at the legacy data collection piece where they've the collectors have gone through and recategorized them.
They ungerrymandered the
exactly. types. Yeah. This is what I put my Patreon bucks to is the legacy data collection so they can fix all of these awful names. So Gruul Lands is no longer Gruul Lands. So there was 5 Goblins players. I was really impressed watching the finals, or not the finals, but just the whole top 8 with the Alluren deck. Like, I hadn't really seen that deck in action, like the Yorion version of it, but it's just good old classic Alluren where it's like playing this mid-range plan and then they eventually just cast an Alluren once you've kind of like worn your opponent out. And there was a Bant Control player. It's just like Alluren. The guy's like, you could see him kind of just like put his hands up in the air. He's like, yeah, I guess. And plays the Recruiter of the Guard and the game's over.
It's interesting, the Asterix on the sideboard too. but it's got four living wish.
Yeah, it's a spicy list. Like, you've got the four living wish in the main, which gives you access to like so many toys in the sideboard. And the fact that you're already 80 cards in the main, like there was all sorts of things going on. But the fact that you get to like play like four prismatic endings and like four Teferis and things like that, it goes back to that, like you're just overwhelming your opponent's ability to, like they can't counter all of your Teferis, for example.
It's interesting in a deck like a Lurin, where like
may not draw it.
Yeah, like I don't know, when you ever look at like a lot of 80 card lists, and Jeff, we talked to you kind of a bit about this, you know, where you're like, oh, you play, what's that two mana guy who's kind of like Flicker Wisp, but not actually?
Oh, Charming Prince.
Charming Prince. He's like, well, it's close enough to Flicker Wisp. But you end up like, yeah, these cards are kind of the same, but there's like, you know, you play one or two of the shittier version. A Lurin, I feel like it's like now is like a lot of good cards, and you don't want to actually be drawing like Cavern Harpy just out of nowhere for no reason. And so playing 80 cards is even better because, yeah, like you alluded to me, like you can put in an extra prismatic ending or two, and you can, you know, play extra ponders, and now you have a force of negation and all your force of wills, and you play one extra copy of Teferi, and all that stuff is great to draw, and you have less chance of drawing Arctic Merfolk.
Yeah, I think it's, this is like, Lurin is the perfect deck for it, where your one ofs are like actually 0.7 ofs, and you just have a much higher likelihood to draw the cards you want and not the cards you don't want. And I think that's genius in a deck like this. Like D&T, you're having to play like your quote unquote fifth copy of something and try to just like make all fives or all four ofs. Whereas Lurin, you get to play a whole bunch of random bullets that you actually don't want to draw. You just want to have the bullets there for eventually when you play an Lurin and then look at your opponent and you're like, do you concede when I play this recruiter?
Do you concede when I repeatedly target you with Yukima to try to time you out while you shuffle your deck?
Every time somebody plays Lurin, I'm like, and you have like one piece of interaction in your hand, you're like, maybe I can get them.
Like, the feeling
I can get them, but maybe I can get them.
When you like flinch on the wrong piece, you're like, okay, the harpy's resolved. I'm gonna kill it. Like, nope.
Too late.
There was one where the Delver opponent had a submerge and they were going for the loop. And I think you put Yukima in play and the guy submerged it at the correct time and everything, but then the Lurin player is just like, okay, I'm gonna cast Ponder. The guy's like, never mind, we're done. He's got it back. But it was really neat. Like, I was really impressed from the Delver's player perspective. Torpor Orb seems like such a strong card right now. Like, it did work against Lurin. Like, they were all bringing it in against them. But the fact that you have Doomsday and Death and Taxes just having a big problem, like, you put that card in play and, like, they have to deal with it. And Death and Taxes doesn't have a lot of ways to deal with it.
No, the standard decklist right now has one way to deal with it post-sideboard. Somebody on Twitter was asking, like, how does Death and Taxes beat Torpor Orbs? And I had to respond to them and say, you just play Gray Ogres and get in the red zone. Like, when somebody plays a Torpor Orb and you just play a 4-5 flyer, you just get in there.
Yeah, I think the real play is like, yeah, exactly. You have to bank on the fact that they know how good Torpor Orb is. So they kept a really bad hand
with the Torpor Orb.
With the Torpor Orb. And you just have to bank on the fact that you're going to flood the board with Squires and Grey Ogres and go to town.
The problem with that is that other decks get to play blue, so you don't need to mull to the Torpor Orb. I just noticed this, but have you guys checked out the list in 21st in the Swiss?
I have not.
I saw this.
Let me read you some highlights of what's in this deck. We have a couple of Karn the Great Creators. Not super exciting. An Opposition Agent. Okay. Three Dark Depths. Three Urborgs. A Lake of the Dead. Infernal Tutors. Four of them. A Tendrils. Helm of Obedience.
Is this
four
death?
Ley Lines. Main Deck. Two Ill-Gotten Gains.
Death? Oh my god.
21st. both a single copy of Painter's Servant and a single copy of Grindstone in the sideboard.
That's great.
Two Dreaded Knights, a Chains of Mephistopheles. I don't have a Chains, but I want to play this on Thursday now. And I'm like in the checkout with three copies of Dark Depths. Like
somebody, oh man, Chains and Paper, madman. That's great.
Is Ilgon's Gain loops and like tendrils.
It feels so good when you start looping Ill-Gotten Gains. Oh man.
This list is so sweet.
I wanted to go back for a second on Torpor Orb and two things. So my big brain play when Innistrad came out, which is like, I'm a genius. Nobody's ever done this before. I'm going to be the best to ever do it, was I put one Cathar's Crusader in my Yorion DMT list. Do either of you know what this card does?
I was just about to look it up, but I'll stop and let you tell me.
It's a common from Midnight Hunt. It's one and a white for a 3-1 flash human soldier. And you can pay one and sacrifice it to naturalize.
Oh, to yeah. Okay. I've
seen. Yeah, it's actually pretty cool. And I feel like it's something that'll definitely be in the, you know, closely accessible part of the D&T box. Just because you get to deal with stuff like Omniscience and, you know, things like Torpor Orb. But as you can probably guess, having a single bullet answer to Torpor Orb does not help when the way in which you find that answer relies on enters the battlefield effect. So really, you're just stuck playing Hill Giants. But the other secret tech is that you can play Solitudes for free and they stick around. Because Torpor Orb will stop the Evoke trigger.
Oh.
Very sneaky.
Despite the fact that we told people not to do this, I just want to clarify for anyone who is maybe interested in it anyways. It's Cathar Commando.
What did I say? Crusader?
Cathar Crusader. Which would actually be a sick throwback. That's better, in my opinion.
What's Cathar's Crusader?
Well, Cathar's Crusade is...
Oh, right. This is the thing where everything gets tokens. Yeah.
But like Cathar Crusader would be a sick throwback, right?
That's the shouldn't even Thalia's Lieutenant. Ability. That'd be just Thalia's Lieutenant. They fucked up.
Which we all know you should play in D&T if you want to lose all your friends, or not play in D&T if you want to lose all your friends, depending on what side of that Arcane you're on, correct? Is that how it went down, the beef?
No. You're getting everything mixed up. Thalia's Lieutenant is the classic one in a white. It's a champion of the parish that gives all your humans +1/+1. You're talking about Luminarch Aspirant.
Oh, okay.
Who shall not be named. You gotta bleep that one out of the podcast.
I want a sidebar. So champion of the parish, I think everyone knows, one mana, one white for a 1/1 human comes into play, gets +1/+1 counter. The new set has Champion of the Perished, which is so corny, but also kind of sweet.
No, it's like S tier. That is a great name and throwback.
One black for a 1/1 zombie, and whenever a zombie comes into play, you get a +1/+1 counter. I got that thing up to like 9/9 last night in sealed. And my opponent was just like, what is happening? And I'm like, you make a lot of zombies in this set, I guess. Anyway, it's attacking for 9.
No, that's an S tier in flavor and name. Like also on the plane, like it not only is it just a nod to something else, it's like a human turned zombie doing the same thing.
In the plane.
Like it's very cool. Zombie Stompy coming to a Thursday night near you.
So I just want to go to our next piece, I'd like to go back to this mono black combo deck for a moment. And
back to death.
I'm just looking at the MTG Melee data for this. And Ethan, the player who played this, after round two, they lost a mono green 12 post. And then other than one match, they won everything. And the only other match in round six was to the eventual winner, Gary, who 2-0'd him. But the round 9 opponent was an Ad Nauseam Tendrils deck. And I was like, oh, wow, like that's the highest ranking on Nausea Tendrils deck. But then I looked at round eight.
And also mono black combo.
Was on mono black combo as well. And I was like, were they like
Hogak? Oh, boo.
Yeah.
I mean, that's yeah. Hogak, so but... I, for a second there, I was like, were there actually like death versus death?
The
like,
mirror
yeah. in round eight at like table seven? Like, is that actually a thing? It's not. It was mono black Hogak. But it's like Hogak Pox, which is pretty cool. Anyway.
I played a deck similar to this, but it was like Morlun and the Painter combo. What's that card? Not Demonic Consultation. The one that like you exile six card, like, well, you lose life.
You're talking Spoils of the Vault? Yeah.
Spoils of the Vault. Yeah. I bet a Spoils of the Vault combo deck that was like kind of similar to this.
This deck was sick as does look pretty gas, though. This looks incredible. Like,
I kind of want to buy obviously Dark Depths, four Helm of Obedience. Not have a chance and just play this.
Do you have four? Do you have three Helm of Obedience?
I have a full playset of Helm of Obedience, my friend.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Are you kidding me? That's like the most Quinn card of all time. Oh, I have one that's a full art altar, and it's like beautiful.
They're like $100 each now.
Well, that's great because I have two French ones that I bought off of Shadow to Three Kings Loot in Montreal, Quebec. I have a Fuller Altar that I bought from Tristan O'Loughlin, and I have the one that I've always had since I was a kid where I was like, this is the best card of all time.
Wow, this deck looks incredible. But yeah, to pilot like something like this to 21st place is pretty sweet. So as I was going through all this data, I remember like when Brian Koval was kind of tweeting out and he was kind of, you know, here's what I'm playing and here's how my day went. I started to scroll through things. I was like, you know, there's a lot of just killers who are playing in this event. And then I started to see like podcast names. And I was like, wow, Tom Smiley, like Dead Format, 11th place. And then I see Brian Cook and I just started like seeing names and I was like, I wonder what the Legacy podcast metagame looked like. Like, how did things go? Like, who was involved? And there was actually seven people who do, which is kind of insane, who do Legacy podcasts who attended this event. Pretty large section of the metagame overall. So it'll be interesting to hear what all the episodes are like this week. I'm sure we're going to get like, you know, one of those recreated historical documentaries where like the day is told through seven different people's points of view.
Like Woodstock. Really something like that.
Yeah, exactly. But just to kind of rattle through, we've got Dead Format Tom Smiley playing Jeskai Delver, which he had a lot of success with at one of the events that he recently played with. And Ian played the same list. So Ian of the Dead Format played what looked like the same list of Jeskai Delver, and Tom got 11th. Ian wasn't so fortunate and got 167th.
Tom Brian also, Cook
and
I don't know if you guys listened to the last episode of the Dead Format. There was a little bit of controversy, but I'm going to say in my books, Tom top aided the Leaving a Legacy Open as well. So that's two like really great finishes for him with Jeskai Delver.
I'm going to agree with you and say that I believe he should have technically top-aided the event. Yeah. If I'm going to pick a side of the controversy. But
regardless, two great finishes for
very,
Tom.
Like, very strong. And for
back strong in paper.
For like a level 60 mage, I think that's pretty impressive. that's all I'll say. 16th, we had Brian Cook, Eternal Glory. He was on TES. Brian Koval, 30th place, again, Eternal Glory. He was on the Bant Control with the Loam deck. Bob Wong, Yellow Punters. He was on the Affinity, like the blue-white Affinity list. I think that was potentially like a sleeper list for the event. Neil came in 5th place with it. I think he fell too.
Yeah, the Bob's was actually mono blue, so it's not playing... what's that? Esper Sentinel?
Isn't there no Esper Sentinel anymore? I remember watching that one online or on Twitter.
Jeff is
McBain. I think like cyborg cards.
Lagging out for you too? Or am I lagging out?
No, it's McBain.
Okay.
It's me.
Sorry. I was just trying to, I was like, this gonna, are we going to overlap? I was just saying Bob's list was actually mono blue. So no Esper Sentinel. Anthony played this against me a couple weeks ago in our Thursday webcam league. Four Thoughtcast and Four Thought Monitor is actually like nuts in this deck. You just reload so quickly.
Yeah. It looks very strong. And then the Echo is on top of that. Like the amount of pressure that you can put down is pretty impressive.
Anthony did that laugh he did when he's doing something busted. And he went, "Oh, I just saw Echo, so I played this, but who needs Echoes when I'm just playing like Thought Cast for one blue and then Thought Monitor for like super cheap too." Well, I'm sitting there being like, yeah, that resolves.
Mm-hmm. Then we had Phil of Eternal Dirtles, and he was on a Jeskai's Miracle list. And when I looked at this list, I thought of our good friend Chad, because it was like 2018 Miracles wanting to play in 2021, even 2017 Miracles. But basically, you're on like 3 Jace and 4 Snapcasters, and you are never tapping anything on your main phase other than to play one of your 4 Prismatic Endings or 4 Expressive Iterations from 2021.
And man, is Expressive Iteration like ever a good card in this deck? Holy crap.
Yeah, very strong. 2 Mystic Sanctuaries in the list. I'm sure there'll be some interesting discussions from that. It looks sweet. And he's even up to like starting to play Preordains and stuff like that. So it is of the school of Philip Schoeniger of like, I'm never going to tap out. I'm just going to like trade off my spells, 1-for-1 you, Terminus you, and treat you and you're dead.
And Dylan, I know you're listening at some point. Please do us a favor. Come back to paper and play this thing.
Indeed. And then rounding it out, the only other person I haven't mentioned is Michael Mapson in 64th playing from the Dark Depths podcast, playing the green-white depths list that he's known for. So super cool to see all these players out and about, along with the other like 300 some odd people who played. Yeah. Would have been fun if we could be talking about this for Puget Sound Battleground 3 in a month.
Hey, we'll be looking down at the tournament results, talking about hopefully some people playing death.
Mm-hmm.
Without the taxes.
How much are chains right now? Like, how much are Italians?
They have to be still so much. Chains is so sick. Chains is up there with like Nether Void. It's just these cars that are like so fucking sick and so like not good.
Chains is $2,000. Oh, actually, you can buy one off Card Kingdom for 1,800 American.
Good deal. Like, you just got a refund from an event, maybe a hotel you booked. Turn that refund into store credit and buy a Chains.
Oh, there's like a played one on Card Kingdom for 1,200 American. So Italian must be like a played Italian one would be like what, like $800?
Sure.
I feel like I'm being trying to find me a deal right now.
I just want to say Dylan's currently in Germany. He can get you those MKM prices.
But if I pay cash, then I can't trade power for it. CE power. CE power is like, I keep saying like I'll trade the CE power.
Ugh, I cashed in my CE power. Oh, great. What'd you get? The chains.
But what if it's low enough that I can get 2 chains?
There's a guy on the old school Discord who has a playset of Italian chains. If you ever wanted 4 of them.
I love that because like at some point in time, he's like, fuck cantrips.
4 chains. Get out. What's the price on these four chains?
The closest price I've seen right now is $9.50. I'm hitting a lot of chain lightnings.
All right.
Okay, I might just put a post up to be like, hey, I have an Ancestral Recall and a Mox Emerald. I'm looking for an Italian chains.
Single chains. All right. Well, we hit the shopping channel section of the show. Does that mean we're wrapping up here?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Let's get us out of here.
I think we're all talking about like stores or purveyors of stores too. So this is perfect.
Yeah. Should I go first? Should I shout out who's gassed this week?
Take us down aisle one of the shopping store.
I wanted to actually do a second one also, because there's one that I meant to do the other week, but I did not. Kourash Elizade is a lands player. He runs the Pendrelvale, which is like the Green Sun Zenith for lands. He posted an article there at this point, probably 2 weeks ago. And it was like, you talk about being a data nerd, McBain. You know, I have a little bit of that in myself. And he posted his, like, I think it was his first 1,000 matches with lands on Magic Online like this year. And he's got, you know, the stats tracked for everything, you know, charts, graphs, where the spikes come, where they go down. Like, it's very interesting stuff and it's super cool. And it's something that I would love to kind of go back and do with the data I've collected for myself, but I'm afraid to look at those charts. So definitely worth checking out. And then the other thing that I wanted to shout out is Dylan from Geek Fortress. Geek Fortress are the guys running Puget Sound Battleground. Dylan, you know, a lot like Jeremy, is a stand-up guy who, you know, will make the appropriate choices. And he's already been reaching out to people that haven't been able to make it because of the border being closed to talk about refunds and stuff. And like, I think everybody expects to get a refund in every case anyways, if you can't go. And that's just kind of like a base level, you know, customer service thing. But it's got to be so hard for these stores right now, and especially these places that are planning these events. Like, there's probably not that many of us, you know, look at the whole picture of people coming from Canada, but still dropping like, you know, 15 people out of a tournament with like a couple of weeks to go. Like, that sucks. And, you know, I just really appreciate them being super cool about all this stuff and really just taking it, you know, in as much stride as they can. So I asked Dylan to see if he can enroll my store or my payment into store credit, and maybe I'll get one of those Caracas I needed, and that at least give him something in his pocket. But yeah, it's nice to, you know, see all these store owners looking out for everybody and doing the best they can.
Speaking of McBain, who you got?
Well, this is kind of playing off of, this is aisle two for the stores, a bit more local. And this is Connections Games and Comics and Matt, who runs it. And again, Quinn, we talked about being able to attend a vaccine required. So for those who don't know, British Columbia has like vaccine passports where you have a little QR code on your phone and stores can scan it and tell that you're vaccinated.
Not necessary for retail stores, though. So they're going above and beyond.
They are going above and beyond. And it was vaccine required, mask required, and pre-reg. Like, you had to, you couldn't just show up in the store and do it. I don't know if you could or not, but you had to buy it online ahead of time. And it was great. Like, it was nice, welcoming, tidy and everything. And then, like, to see the familiar faces again. Baker and Max, who were there, was fantastic. Just playing in paper again was fantastic, and to be able to provide a safe environment kind of where we're at right now, I think is fantastic. So I really appreciated that. And then big shout outs to Max for giving me the pre-release kit that contained my several mythics that I opened to create my sealed deck that I opened so many like on color mythics and rares that I didn't even really read my blue, red or white cards. I was like, I don't even need to check these out. But I did open a Renin 7 as well, which was like the one card I really wanted from the set, so I could have that for my lands deck. So that was great. And Renin 7 is definitely gas when you have seven lands in play, you make the token and then you like mulch once or twice. Your opponent's like, okay, maybe I can deal with this thing. And you say, I'm going to activate the zero ability and put in five lands into play tapped. And they go, oh my God, this thing is enormous. So I'm looking forward to ultimately that thing. But yeah, that's all for me.
We've mentioned him a couple of times on the cast already, but I wanted to shout out. We've also mentioned him in this section of the podcast on a previous podcast. But I want to mention Jeremy again. AKA, or maybe better known as, Missouri MTG. Again, always looking out for the, not just the safety players, the best interested players in general, whether it's an event, things he's selling, you know, he's just all around stand-up guy. Also, one of the things that I think prompted him to finally cancel is that he also got COVID. So Jeremy, we're wishing you the best. Hope you get well soon, man. And also just thanks for all you do. Anything else before we call it quits?
No, sir.
I just want to end by saying we got our third member back in McBain. I don't think this is your fault, because I think it'd be the same for if either one of us were missing, but we are almost exactly 33% longer than we were last episode, having added a third person back into the mix. So once again, if you've stuck with us this long, thanks for listening. Even if you haven't, thanks for listening, even though you won't hear this, and we'll see you all in two thresholds.
I want to know this madman that skips most of the episode to get right to the end.
Wants to hear the thank yous. Again.
That's gas.
To go back to Mandarin Quinn, look at Jeff, we only need something during the week that lifts us up. You know, I want you to let me know what that is, and I'm gonna make sure that we as a team work to provide that for you.
I don't like Manager Quinn. I thought he went away.
Manager Quinn's boring.
I thought you were like Wild West Cowboy Quinn now. Yo, I got the technical work done. Don't ask me how it happened. It just did.
Someone quit and they were like, can you fill in? So I'm like, yeah, I can fill in for a bit. So I'm back. Polite caring me is back. Temporary.
That's a change.
Exactly. All right, we're done.
Death.